Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Heartland Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in economics and business. This is Principles of Microeconomics, Econ 101, Section 1 for Spring Semester 2012. Lecture 13, delivered on March 6, 2012. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 1.
Today, review for exam one. Exam one is 50 questions, multiple choice, true and false, and perhaps some multiple guess, if you're into that. Now I'm going to go through and give you information that will help you focus your studying for the exam. And then I will finish what I have to say, and then it will be your turn to ask me questions about the exam. If you ask me something, well, is this going to be on the exam, and it's not on the exam, I'll say, no, that's not on the exam. So it's worth your while to actually participate in this class and ask questions about this exam. First things first, I will ask some fundamental questions about economics. From the first and second lectures, what is economics all about? One word to describe economics would certainly be scarcity. Who is the father of modern economics? That would be Adam Smith and all of that. I'll certainly, in one way or another, ask you about the different types of solutions. First of all, what are the three fundamental questions that arise from the economic problem? What to produce, how to produce it, and for whom to produce it? You need to know that. No doubt about it, you need to know that. And also the three major economic systems that answer those three questions, and which one would be favored by Western capitalists like we have in the United States. I'll ask you about costs, opportunity costs, sunk costs, historical costs, what's important in economics, what would be more important in accounting, what's the relationship between cost in economics and cost in accounting, and what does that mean for the profit in economics versus profit in accounting? I'll touch on, obviously, on consumer choice theory. What is marginal utility? You need to know marginal utility, what I mean by marginal utility, consumer equilibrium. I gave you a problem about consumer equilibrium. I'll ask something about that. So go back in your notes to make sure you know about that. I am now getting down to the meat and potatoes of this exam. Supply and demand, the law of supply and the law of demand, you need to know those. What's the difference between a shift in demand and a shift in quantity demanded? What causes a shift in quantity demanded versus what would cause a shift in a demand curve itself? You need to know that. Same for supply. If the price of a product goes up, all that's going to do is change quantity. It's going to decrease quantity demanded and increase quantity supplied. You need to know about price elasticity of demand, price elasticity of supply. I'm going to ask you to calculate a price elasticity, probably a couple of price elasticities. I will expect you to be able to calculate them. I gave you a quiz. You'll have problems somewhat like that on the exam. If price goes up by 20% and quantity demanded falls by 15%, well, that would mean that demand is price inelastic. And what does that mean for total revenue? revenue changes when you change the price. Are you going to gain revenue or lose revenue based upon the price elasticity of demand? You need to know that, definitely. And also income elasticity of demand as well. What's normal and superior goods versus an inferior good? And the substitution effect versus the income effect and what that does to price elasticity. An inferior good tends to be more price inelastic because the income effect acts against the substitution effect, unlike with normal and superior goods where they act in the same direction. Now, moving towards dynamics, you need to know the different auction systems, English auction versus a Dutch auction. When the price is too high, what kind of an auction is induced versus when the price is too low, what happens, what kind of an auction is induced? By the way, just to remind you, and you've seen this on, you'll have a picture. Two demand curves, one going up, an arrow up on one demand curve, and then an arrow going down on the next demand curve, labeled A and B respectively. And then I'll draw two demand curves with an arrow pointing from the left to the right demand curve. I'll label that arrow C, and then an arrow pointing from the right to the left demand curve, I'll label D. And then I'll describe some scenarios and say, well, which one of these arrows is applicable here? So if the price of the product falls, that would just be a change in quantity demanded, so that would be arrow B, increase the demand. If I were to tell you that the price of a complement rises, well, if the price of a complement rises, that will decrease demand for this product. That would be D, as in doggy. Now, though, so you'll see those two graphs with the A, B, C, and D on them, and I'll ask you a few questions about them. So make sure you go back and see that. Are comfortable with that from the quiz I gave you on that. Now, moving to supply and demand dynamics, make sure you know what happens to price and quantity if quantity goes, if supply curves and demand curves shift back and forth. Supply and demand dynamics. So, for example, the demand for a product decreases at the same time supply increases. So what happens to equilibrium quantity and equilibrium price in this situation? Now, this is two-sided dynamics, and I showed you how you should do these. You write an S and a D across a row, then to the left, down a little ways in a column, write a P and a Q. And then from there, what you should do is just write in the arrows. Demand for the product decreases, so I'll draw a down arrow on demand. Supply increases, so I'll draw an up arrow by the S. And then I'm done with the problem pretty much. The word problem is now irrelevant. I just go and work it out. Okay, supply increases, that causes price to fall. And if supply increases, the amount going to the shelves is increasing. Now, if demand is decreasing, that will cause the price to drop. And demand decreasing will cause the amount going off the shelves to fall. So now I can finish it. Across the P row, I've got two down arrows, which means that the price unambiguously falls. But on the quantity row, I've got an up arrow and a down arrow. So because I don't know the sizes of the arrows, the equilibrium quantity clearing the market may rise, fall, or stay the same. I just don't know. I will ask at least one, probably a couple of questions about this. Supply and demand dynamics. There are four different scenarios. Demand and supply both going up, demand and supply both going down, demand going up, supply going down, demand going down, supply going up. So there's four possible ways that I could ask that dynamics question. Make sure you know those. They're actually not too bad once you get the hang of this way I do them instead of using graphs. Okay. Whoa, wrong exam I'm looking at. I'll have a question, sort of a dynamics question, where I'm going to draw you graphs, four different graphs. Let's see if I can do this freehand. And on these four graphs, I'll have supply and demand curves shifting. Both of them shifting. Now on the first one, well, I can't say which order they'll be in, but this first one, I'm going to have both demand and supply shifting outward. The second one, I'm going to have the demand curve shifting outward. And the supply curves shifting inward. On the next one, I'll have the demand curve shifting inward, but the supply curve shifting outward. And on the last one, I'll have both demand and supply shifting inward. And I'll label them A, B, C, and D. And then I'll just describe some scenarios. And I'll say, okay, which one of these graphs am I describing? For example, I could say, all right, the number of companies in an industry has risen at the same time consumers' incomes have risen for this normal good. The number of companies in the industry has increased, has risen, and the incomes of consumers have increased for this normal good. So which one of those graphs would that be? Talk to me. Which one? You'll need to know this because I'm going to do these four graphs, and I'll have two questions for it. So which one would it be in this case? Yes, it would, because the number of companies increasing will increase the supply of the product. Now, this is a normal good, and consumer incomes have gone up, so that's going to push the demand curve for the good outward. So in this case, that would be graph A, where both demand and supply increase. And again, you'll see this picture on the exam, and there will be two questions related to it. What am I describing here, A, B, C, or D? Okay, I'm telegraphing my punch as well as I can, so it won't be a surprise when you see this on the exam, this graph. Now, there are a few other things that I might ask. Oh, yes, make sure you know about price ceilings and price floors, shortages and surpluses and all of that. I'll ask about that. I might ask a definitional kind of question, and I also might ask something about, farm price support, farm crop price supports, do those represent price ceilings or price floors? And that's price floors. Or I might say rent control. Is that a price ceiling or a price floor? That's a price ceiling. Okay. So that covers that up. Let me go on here. Oh, yeah. Now, before I go too much in, I talked about long run when I got to cost, but I had mentioned long run before that. Know the relationship between a long run supply curve and a short run supply curve. The relationship between a long run supply curve and a short run supply curve. And while I'm thinking about it, a couple of things that I forgot to mention before. One is, what affects elasticities? Especially price elasticities of demand. Another thing is, make sure you know consumer and producer surplus. The concepts of consumer and producer surplus. Make sure you know those. Cost curves. Okay, I'll talk about cost here. As I had told you before. Oh, before I go on, make sure you know about externalities, negative and positive externalities, and also about merit and demerit goods, and public goods as well. Again, negative and positive externalities, merit and demerit goods, and what I mean by a public good. And what are the problems with public goods? The free rider effect and congestion, of course, are the two problems. Merit and demerit goods are goods. Merit goods are goods and services that provide such a large positive externality that they become encouraged by public policy. Demerit goods are goods or services that create such large negative externalities that they become the subject of deterrence in public policy. And remember the ways that we can foster, encourage use of goods is by propaganda, by subsidies, and by mandates. In other words, require laws that require some use of them. And we deter demerit goods through propaganda, through laws, fines, and taxes, and ultimately through outright bans on some that create such extraordinary negative externalities. So make sure you know about those kinds of goods. Now, going on to costs. First things first, as I had told you, now these formulas will be on a formula sheet at the back of the exam, but do make sure you know how to use them. The total cost is variable cost plus fixed cost. And then I can divide everything by Q to get total cost over Q equals variable cost over Q plus fixed cost over Q, which is the same thing as saying that average total cost equals average variable cost plus average fixed cost. Bear with me one moment here. I'm looking for something. Let me give you an example. At 500 units of output, variable cost $30,000 And total cost is $40,000. Find average fixed cost. Now, this isn't exactly the wording on the exam, but it's very close. And again, like I said, the first thing you always do in a word problem is get the words out of the way. Get the numbers out and into the formula. Okay, we got a 500 units, so that's going to be Q. So everywhere I see a Q, I'm going to replace it with a 500. I got that out of the way. Now, I see that the variable cost is $30,000. So wherever I see a variable cost, a VC, I'm going to replace it with a $30,000. Just do it that way. Just get it, the numbers in. So I've got the $30,000 out of the problem. Now, it says total cost is $40,000. So wherever I see a total cost, a TC, I'm going to put a $40,000 in its place. And now I'm finished. I can finish this problem. There's really nothing much left to do except a little bit of arithmetic, maybe a little algebra. Well, I see 40,000 plus equals 30,000 plus fixed cost. So that means the fixed cost must be $10,000. Has to be 10,000. So I can now put in the 10,000 right there where I see FC. So now I can get ATC, it's 40,000 over 500, which is 80. AVC is 30,000 over 500, which is 60. And AFC, sure enough, is 10,000 over 500, which is 20. So I can now say, oh, well, there was what was asked. I could answer a lot of different questions now. It's all over. It's that quick. It takes less than a minute to do these if you do them my way. So it's a good idea for you to do them my way here. Just get the numbers out of the problem as fast as you can and then forget about the word problem. It just becomes an arithmetic problem pretty much. That's about it. I will ask that at least one, probably a couple of those on the exam. Nothing hard about it. Now, I will also ask about marginal cost, the cost of the last unit produced. So I could ask a question like this. Well, let me erase this now. Had 40 units of output. Variable cost is 240 dollars. At 41 units of output, variable cost is $255. What is the marginal cost of the 41st unit? K, Can you tell me off the top of your head what the answer is?
$15.
Yes, it's $15. Marginal cost is not affected by fixed costs. It's affected only by variable cost. Variable cost, actually, it's backwards. But I can even show you. It's not that hard to show you. Look, I have quantity, variable cost, fixed cost equals total cost. So 40 units, I had a variable cost of $240. And I had a fixed cost. Well, actually, I didn't even put down the fixed cost. Doesn't matter, though. Units, I had $255 plus the same, I don't know. But the fixed cost is the same number. So the marginal cost of the 41st unit would be $15 more. You don't need to know the fixed cost because it would be the same number. So the change in cost would be only what was being driven by the variable cost. Don't let me bluff you by putting in a fixed cost for 40 units and no fixed cost for 41 units, or if I don't even give you the fixed cost at all because fixed cost doesn't matter for marginal cost. Now, as far as marginal cost goes, I will ask you questions like to make sure that you know how marginal cost and average cost relate to each other. If average variable cost is falling, then marginal cost, let me throw a multiple choice type of thing for you. The marginal cost is A, falling, B, zero, C, below average variable cost, D, above average variable cost, or E, none of the above can be said with certainty. None of the above can be known with certainty. Now let me draw you. There's the marginal cost curve and the average variable cost and average total cost curves. Remember that they, both of those two average curves bottom out when they cross, as they cross, when they cross the marginal cost curve. So what do you say the answer is? Average, so what is it? Yes, C. Because if the average variable cost is falling, AVC is falling, say we've got in this area right here. Say we got this output level here. Average variable cost is falling. The marginal cost of that unit would be less. As long as the last is below the average, it's going to drag the average down when you put it in to calculate it. So the answer is C. Those can be the hardest questions on the exam, have historically the lowest correct answer rates. But if you just look at the graphs, and the graphs will be there on the exam for you. You don't even have to draw the graphs, because it's kind of a pain in the butt to exactly get those bottoms right on the marginal cost curve. But the graphs will be there. You can just look at them and see it. Okay? And that's all there is to it. I'll ask this two times, two different ways. I'll also ask you one of those ones like I said before. Is it true that, well, true or false? If average variable cost is falling, then average total cost must be falling too. If average variable cost is falling, then average total cost must be falling. Is that true or false? Let me say it one more time. If average variable cost is falling, then average total cost must be falling too. Look at the graph. What do you say? You're nodding your head. Is that a true or false? It's true. Look, do you see it? Average variable cost is falling up to this output level right here. See that? There is no question that average total cost is falling at clear to that output level. Now let me throw the other side of it at you, and I did this a couple of lectures ago. I do appreciate that. I want to make sure you know how to answer both sides of it. If average total cost is falling, then average variable cost must be falling too. Again, if average total cost is falling, then average variable cost must be falling too. Now, that's false. Because right here, there's an output range, which, as I had mentioned, is an important output range. The part of the output range where the marginal cost is between average variable cost and average total cost, where you have the average total cost curve is still going downward, but average variable cost has already started its upward, permanent upward trend. So the second question that I just gave, statement I gave you, is false. There is a range where average total cost is still falling, but average variable cost has already started to rise. Make sure you know both sides of it, because I can ask it to you either way or both ways. And by the way, as promised on this exam, I will give you a graph with all four of the cost curves on it. AFC, AVC, ATC, and MC. I will simply label them 1, 2, 3, 4, and you match which one's which. Four easy questions. You will not go home empty-handed. You can put it up on the fridge, get it laminated, the whole nine yards. Those are four easy questions, for God's sake. What always weirds me out, it happens every semester, some people get them wrong, or get some of them wrong. What I still cannot figure out is how people can get three of them right and one of them wrong. What the... You know what? I think people do that just to bother me. You know, I'm going to mess with his head today. Okay. Also, make sure you know about the long-run average cost curve, where economies of scale, constant returns to scale, diseconomies of scale, and the LRAC. That's the long-run average cost curve. And also the minimum efficient scale of output. And what the, in terms of the long-run average cost curve, what does it mean to be a natural monopoly? Remember, that's the long-run average cost curve that never turns upward. No matter how large a company gets, it's realizing economies of scale. see if there's anything else I want to bring up to you. Okay, I've gone way into depth and detail, told you virtually everything that's going to be on the exam. I've left a few, obviously I'm not going to be completely comprehensive, but that's a lot of turf. You can, if you're comfortable with everything that I've given you, you're going to do just fine on this exam. Now it's your turn. Ask me questions. Do you have any questions you want to have answered? I've been pretty thorough here. A little more thorough than I usually am, but there you go. Yeah. Yeah, I pull questions off the quizzes. I'll change wording or something like that. Sometimes it's just identical. It's the same question. Yeah, so those quizzes are a good place to study, a good way to study for these exams. Other questions you have? Yeah. Yes. Whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a good question. The economies are the market economy, the traditional, and the command economy. I would anticipate that you would obviously know that ours is a market economy. I would also could ask you, all right, which one is the one that we see in every economy? It's hiding under the surface of every economy. And that's the traditional economy. No matter whether you're a command or a capitalist system, there's always that custom, tradition, and all of that that's hiding under the surface of what we do. In the old, sometimes I used to ask, years ago it was kind of scary that I've been around long enough to ask, give me an example of a command economy. You know, you could answer the Soviet Union. Well, that doesn't exist anymore. So command economies, there's actually only one still out there that's close to a pure command economy now. No.
Korea?
Oh, North Korea. Now, China is this weird-ass blend of a capitalist sort of economy and still some aspects of a hardcore command economy. And Cuba is highly socialist, but there is, even in Cuba, there's a lot of market economy that's existing and moving more so in the absence of Castro and more of a little bit more moderation of his brother Raul. So actually, it scares me that you could have listed dozens of countries back when I was teaching in the 1980s. Now I could list probably only one that would qualify straight up. Yeah. You're going to need to know the basics of Adam Smith and all of that. I would also anticipate that you would know something about, well, the certainly the, well, no, not on this exam. I usually do that on the final exam, about what we call the era when we actually started investigating problems of nature as opposed to just thinking that magic was running everything. That was the Age of Enlightenment, but I usually reserve that for the final exam. But yeah, you'll need to know about Adam Smith, good old Adam. Bless his soul. Direct cost, I'm looking down through here for something else. Seems like there was something I was going to mention. I've covered a lot of the turf. Do you have other questions? You leave with it because you might want to use it for the final. You know, it's a great study guide. That's why I do it, because it makes you study like a boss.
Can you make notes on the note cards during
the test? No, absolutely not. Damn woman. No, really. Look, you know, okay, here it is.
I would scratch through it so I wouldn't use it next time.
Let's try this. 1:48 a.m. That was when I was born. See, that means I was born at night. That was not last night, okay?
not going to want to use on the next test or the final. I might want
to... Well, you might want to commit it to your damn memory, you know? By the way, also, just as a side note, make sure you know I gave you these laws and rules, like the law of demand, the law of supply, the law of diminishing marginal utility, the law of increasing marginal cost, the law of diminishing marginal productivity. I gave you this sort of series of laws, and sometimes those will come into play, either directly. I'll show you a picture. Which picture is the law of demand, graphically? Oh, it's that downward sloping line he's got there. It's almost like a duh, but you make sure you know those laws, okay, so that you can answer those efficiently, those questions, quickly. And the law of increasing marginal cost is actually a consequence of the law of decreasing marginal productivity, which was brought to the apocalyptic stage by none other than what natural scientist several centuries ago? What was his name? Malthus. You need to know that. Haven't you seen Zombieland? God. So you don't actually know about cardio and double tap? Really? Hey, you're zombie meat. I'm sorry. I can't help you. Okay. Where the hell am I? Okay. Anything else?
What about normative econ and positive?
Now, you should probably know the difference between normative economics and positive economics, and the difference between macroeconomics and microeconomics. In other words, positive economics has to do with what is. Normative economics has to do with what should be. And then, let me throw one out to you real quick for the micro-macro. Okay. Marginal cost. Would that be a micro or a macro subject? A what? Micro. Yeah. Because that has to do with companies. Inflation. Macro. Unemployment. Macro. Good. You got the idea. Utility theory. Micro, because it's just people, individuals. And then you get some, as you'll see in the last maybe three in the lectures that come after this exam, you see me touching into macro, coming back into micro, going into macro, back and forth, because there's this turbulent area. For example, we're going to talk about monopolies. Monopolies are micro companies. But we're going to talk about antitrust law, how public policy deals, or at least theoretically deals, with these undesirable animals called the monopolies. That's macro. Near the end of the course, we're going to talk about matters like income, poverty, and wealth distribution. That's sort of macro, but it talks about households and things like that. So it's micro, too. So you're going to see these turbulent areas where I'm going to shade into macro to get you ready for next semester when you take macroeconomics. And unfortunately, you won't take it from me, which means you won't get a good course, at least not the best course you could, but there you are. Anyway, anything else? That's all I have for you today. I thank you.